Sean, I missed you.
Hey, buddy, it's good to see you on screen again.
It's been quite a while. It's been about 2 weeks. That's a
Almost
long
two.
time for us.
This is quite a while.
Quite a while, quite a while. And how are you surviving Dune Part 2 outside?
It's great to be in the third act of Blade Runner 2049, or just any Gareth Edwards film. This does feel like a 90s crime movie where we've crossed over into the southern border. It's like I walked outside and I was like, oh.
Yeah, I'm waiting for like a hay bale to go by or whatever it is, not a hay bale, you know what I'm talking about.
Tumbleweed.
Tumbleweed, thank you, that
Yes.
one. It's really weird outside. It's scary, it's frightening. Those damn Jewish space lasers lighting stuff on fire in Quebec.
It is just like nobody's really gotten on the old horn to tell me like everything's gonna be okay. Everyone's just kind of like, okay, yeah, this is just what it is now. I'm like, is this just gonna be like this from now on? Like, do we get oxygen tanks? What's happening?
I was on TikTok last night when I couldn't sleep, and everyone was like raising the alarms and talking about how bad this is and stuff. And I was like, oh my God, we're gonna die.
I keep on wondering. I'm like, is it like if like we're all just kind of like, just slowly processing this, kind of like, I don't know, February 2020, where we're like, could be
Yeah.
good, could be
It's gonna be fine. It's only gonna be a couple weeks. It's only gonna be a week or so or 2 days, you know?
shout out to like just the pandemic calling it, where it's like, now we're wearing masks outside.
Man, we're gonna have to be fighting. I wonder what people who are like pissed off about masks over the pandemic are gonna be saying with all this if they start wearing, like, if it makes sense to wear a mask.
They will go outside and take a deep breath, and then, we'll just let
Die.
everything else take the rest. Yeah, like
Yeah. We have a lot to talk about tonight. We're gonna dive into four movies. First, we're gonna do Little Mermaid, then we're gonna do You Hurt My Feelings, followed by The Boogeyman, and ending with the most recent Spider-Verse, across the Spider-Verse, if you will. Sean, let's hit it right after this. Hayden.
everyone is part of the family at this point.
It used to be my fan fiction idea that I had. So this movie was garbage.
What is this? You are a monster beyond all belief.
Put them all in the thing and let them do the thing, you know what I mean?
How?
You're lucky to have me back.
You're never gonna get 60 million people because you're not a Super Bowl. Shut up!
So chaotic.
Welcome to the Guy at the Movies podcast. I am Joe. He is Sean. We are back with a special midweek episode to catch ourselves up before we get back on track this weekend. So first of all, apologies to everyone that listens for a couple weeks of chaos when it comes to pod releases. Hope you enjoyed the special pods that were out there. But, Sean and I are very busy individuals, and sometimes life gets in the way, but we're making an effort to make sure that we are on track again.
We have had a great streak of just like not being busy on weekends, and then just all of a sudden it became a problem. Like,
Yeah.
it was great having these Saturday morning, like our Saturday morning recording sessions, and then all of a sudden, nope, didn't work out anymore.
This is exactly what happened to us on Tuesday nights. It was like, okay, this isn't working anymore. We're busy on Tuesday nights, or we're exhausted, or blah, blah, blah. We need to move to Saturdays.
And now here we are on a weekday again.
And here we are on a weekday. But it will be good. We're going to dive right into the reviews because there are a number of movies that we wanted to cover that we haven't had the opportunity to talk about. And just to preface it, Sean, I think we're on the same page with most of these, except
Pretty
for,
much.
I think, the first one we'll talk about, which is the
Yeah.
live-action Little Mermaid starring Halle Bailey, Melissa McCarthy, Jonah Howard King. Who else am I missing? Daveed Diggs, Awkwafina, Jacob Tremblay. It's
Javier
Javier
I think.
Bardem. What's that?
I think he was in it.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that because someone I was having a discussion the other night with someone, and they brought up like, "Oh, I didn't think he was in it," and I'm like, "Well, there's actually more to that." Yeah, interesting. But so anyway, this is, of course, the right-wing woke crusaders' most hated movie of the moment, because there is a black woman, a mixed woman playing. That's actually really rude of me. I don't know if she's mixed or if she's black, but either way, a person of color playing Ariel, and quite honestly, can we at least agree that she was phenomenal?
I think everyone can agree with that. She was the best part of it easily.
Yeah.
And it's not even just like th that they plugged a different bit of diversity in there. It's interesting that I, you know, there's a cynical part of me that says that Disney did just say, like, you know, hey, if we check this box, we'll look good or something like that. There's a part of me that possibly thinks that. And, you know, the other half of me says, good, cool, we'll have more diverse characters. And also, if you were to line up a bunch of people to play Ariel, I see her doing the best job. Like, she has that bubbly personality. She has that curiosity. It's like a really good job, regardless of race, that she actually kind of nails it. So with that, I'm in. I'm absolutely in with her. She was quite amazing. I think actually everybody from bad reviews to good reviews all agree that she was probably the best part.
She had an innocence to her that also had, like you said, the curiosity, but then the persistence. And I think that really worked for the character because that's what the character is or who the character is. And of course, the voice is just like absolutely phenomenal. Overall, I mean, I enjoyed this. I knocked it a little bit because I thought that it went a little too long. And there's some pieces that just felt like a little frustratingly unnecessary. But all in all, I think this is one of the stronger outings for the Disney live action. I thought the cast was great. I was very concerned about how the live action animals would present. But I thought David Diggs as Sebastian stole the show in a lot of ways, as did Awkwafina. I thought Awkwafina was wonderful as well. And she's usually, you know, can go either way with me, depending on how they play the character. But I thought the inclusion of those two was great. I thought Jonah Howard King actually did a really fine job. His song isn't my favorite. That was one of the new songs they
wrote. Nobody gives a fuck about Prince Eric. That's like, why are they trying to give this dude conflict, man? I don't know. When they did his song, I'm like, it's not even a bad song. It's just like, this could easily go away.
Go to TikTok because a lot of people are thirsting over them.
Oh, he's hot. Yeah, no, he's hot. Well, like, he could be hot without having his own like bullshit story that doesn't matter. Like, that's what I would say, like, I actually, one of my concerns was also the live action animals. I think they worked. I think that they did a good job with Sebastian in constructing him with somewhat of an animated face. And so I kind of like, all right, so this is not just like a terrifyingly faced crab. Like, okay, they're giving him some eyes. I think Awkwafina is cast perfectly. So the people that find her annoying, it's like, well, that's Scuttle, man. I mean, that's exactly who Scuttle is. He's a loud idiot, like idiotic thing. And Awkwafina plays that great. With all compliments.
One line where she's like, did Ariel kill the prince yet?
Oh yeah. Perfect. Like, just like, and that's, you know, I'm thinking about it. I think it was Buddy Hackett who originally voiced. And it's just like, dumb sounding, stupid comedian. Like, it is perfectly cast. It is the exact thing you want. Obnoxious as well. And like, I love Awkwafina for those qualities. I sound like I'm putting her down for them, but no, I love her for those qualities. And I think that was like a great part of this. Yeah, I think my main issue that I hung up on, it just kind of looked like shit. And I know that they don't have the same. I know they don't have the same number as James Cameron. I know they don't have his toys. I get that. I'm willing to accept that. But there's just so many moments that just didn't look good. I think Melissa McCarthy did a great job. I think that her villainous character sort of felt isolated and standoffish. That was the point. She's supposed to be in exile. I get that. But it did seem like a different movie entirely. And I was just like, wow, I don't see any connection with the villain here, even though, you know, obviously she betrays and everything. And then, you know, when she becomes supersized, I was like, oh boy. All in all, I gave this a C, and I like recommend this to families. You will love it. I'm glad I saw it with a bunch of kids because their wonder was amazing. I'm the cynical asshole. It's like, you know, it doesn't look realistic. Mermaids. Yeah. Good on me. But I think there was just a part of me that just didn't look not realistic, but just didn't look good to me. But kids are loving it. I think that kids will truly enjoy it, as opposed to another film that I don't think kids are enjoying as much that we'll talk about, although it's one of my favorite films of the year.
Oh boy. Yeah, I'm with you. I think there was some, it was a little, jarring at first when I think it's when Triton's calling all the mermaids home. There's a few of those like mermaids when they're going, I'm like, ooh, that animation could use a little bit more work. But all in all, I mean, for a Disney film that's not Avatar, I thought it kind of tapped into the Aquaman angle a little bit in terms of their animation, the way that they use special effects. Not animation's the wrong word, in the way they use special effects. This was just a fun time. I will tell you this. I saw it twice within a week because I went to the press screening, and my mother was unable to go, and she loves The Little Mermaid and loves Disney. So the following week when they did a promotional screening, I took her, and she loved it. She absolutely loved it. And I was like, you are the target market for this.
Oh yeah.
It's not the film critics. It's not what it's like. You just had a good time. And I will say that seeing all the kids and stuff like dressed up going into the theater and, you know, regardless of race, regardless of, you know, whatever background, it was just, it's really great to see a family event like this in theaters. And Disney, I think, is knocking it out of the park with that, even though it's not doing well overseas because of a lot of racist backlash, which is really fascinating. But I think they're going to do well enough here that they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, you saw just the miniature kids just like, you know, standing up from their seats and right up against the countertop of, you know, just like, you know, saying whoa a million times. And I'm like, well, I love that. I love to see that magic. And, I'm someone that's like, well, technically the Avatar the Way of Water effects were actually more primal toward. And I'm like, okay, well, I can go fuck off with that, because truly, like, it captures the magic of the youth, and that's exactly its mission. So, you know, I'm okay with that.
Did you think it was too intense for kids?
No. I mean, like, I think about, you know, the original animated movie, and Ursula was pretty scary in that, and the eels were pretty scary in that. The shark scene, see, it's like stuff like the shark scene, which was like, it's just dark and muddy, and like, I was just like, I guess this could scare people, but it just doesn't really too much, because it's just I didn't have that visual danger there. I think that, you know, it's tough for a kid to sit down for two hours and 15 minutes. And I think that that's a problem in and of itself.
It should have come under two.
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, just flat out. Yeah.
All right. Let's get to the next film here. I gave it a 4 out of 5. You gave it a C.
I gave it a C. A very, very healthy, friendly C. Under, like, not under the C, like over. Yeah. Come on. Clip it.
Over the C.
Yeah.
Oh my god. Let's talk about You Hurt My Feelings. This was the Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies led film that is basically focused on a loving couple who do everything together until Julie Louis-Dreyfus's character, who is a writer, overhears her husband saying how much he hates her latest manuscript. Sean, start us off with this one.
Oh god, I loved this one. I loved this because I thought it was, first of all, just hysterical in the mundane. Just Julie Louis-Dreyfus reacting to being older when Michaela Watkins takes the Tums out of her purse. I think that, like, and just like the chemistry with Tobias Menzies, what I love is that how like matter of fact this was, how natural this was. And I think the banality of it is its charm. Because there is that inciting event, but that inciting event is not really like the main focus of this. It is just scene after scene after scene of daily life. And but, you know, then they have that event and then things change and things get strange. I think what I liked about this the most is this was a marriage comedy where, for once, we have millions of marriage comedies out there, but this is one where finally marriage doesn't suck. And I think that's a great, great thing. Yes, they have this conflict. Yes, there are bumps in marriage. Yes, there are difficulties to it. But it's also pretty great. I mean, granted, I'm pretty green in that subject matter as of now. Like, I'm working on the second year with my wife. But, you know, I'm pretty goddamn happy. And, like, I'm enjoying marriage. Yes, you know, arguments happen and stuff. But, like, I you know, like the Everybody Loves Raymonds or the Knocked Ups, where it's like, oh, marriage is absolutely miserable. There's nothing good about it at all. And it's like, well, no, dude. I mean, yeah, there's some drawbacks here and there. But for the most part, I'm having a pretty good time. And I like that they had that where, you know, I get to see Tobias Menzies like just go on a rant about V-necks, which was just stellar. It's like it is almost like this like calm, neutral Seinfeld where it's just like he's just talking about V-necks and talking about like how terrible they are because he doesn't have cleavage and doesn't really have chest hair to work with him. And I'm like, oh, buddy, man, I get what you're saying there. I think that like this was just such an honest movie about marriage that I just really loved it. I really loved like how you handle any sort of relationships and how when do you support, what like in what ways are the best ways to support. Like I joked before I saw this movie, like, oh boy, I hope Sam's honest with me about the podcast. And she is honest with me about podcasts and reviews and stuff. She's like, oh, you should check that over another time. So she has that angle of thank God she's like that, because otherwise, you know, I don't know what I would do. But I really, really enjoyed this a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I'm gonna butcher the name, but the writer director
Nicole Hofstetter. Yeah,
Hofstetter. Just absolutely incredible slice of life movie. That's the term, the phrase I keep using. And you know, I'm a big fan of movies like this that take an honest look at authentic relationships and authentic issues in relationships. And it was, I think you couldn't have found a better cast. And that goes all the way down to Owen Teague as the son. The juxtaposition of what he was dealing with in his relationship, and the way that, you know, I'm thinking about the scene where Julie Louis-Dreyfus and Tobias Menzies are sitting on the couch and they're on opposite ends of the couch, and Owen comes in with like a bottle or whatever, and he's just talking to them, and he's like, what the hell? Like, leave me, like, the way that they were trying to approach it. There's you kind of nailed it, and I don't remember exactly how you phrased it, but it's this subtle humor. It's like, it's a little offbeat, and it's just like regular conversation, and the, oh, you carry Tums around in your purse? like you do that? And there's just something about, and I say it every time we talk about a movie that she's in, Julia Louis-Dreyfus is just phenomenal with anything that she's given. And I will watch her read the obituaries, or listen to her read the obituaries. She's just, she's incredible. And Tobias Menzies, you know, looks like he should be playing Dracula or another vampire in another movie, but he does very well in this. He's incredible opposite her, and the entire cast itself. Michaela Watkins as well was just
amazing. Delightful. I mean, she's always great. Yeah. I want to shout out Arian Moyed.
And I was just going to say that.
Is from Succession fame. He's also, I believe, on some of the Marvel series as part of Damage Control. He is the most versatile actor around now, because in Succession, he's such a different character. He's so put together and confident and sleazy. And in this, he's just a puddle of emotion
the whole time.
The comedic energy he brings is so great. And I love that he's just such a typical actor where it's just like, you know, oh, I'm just completely a raw nerve this whole time. I love it.
Sean, I hope this doesn't come across the wrong way. Oh. When I was watching it, I was like, this is totally Sean.
Yes. I does not come across that insult at all. I actually kind of see it. When him and Tobias Menzies are talking, I'm like, yeah, I kind of sound like both of these people. The tired, agitated, like, just gruff person. And also just Arian Moyed, just, like, absolutely, like, way too over-the-topness.
Yeah, absolutely. All in all, it's just a really, really great movie. Another A24 hit. Like, God, whoever – A24 is just the studio to beat these days, you know?
It is, you know, like, I love how they even survived the memes where everyone, like, the backlash of the meme, where the memes are like, oh, A24, you must be a film bro. People, like, don't even care about that anymore. It's like, no, they keep on putting good shit in the air, so we're not even going to make fun of them anymore.
Yeah, it's all in all, I just think it's a really great movie, and just, like, really taking a look at the modern relationship anxieties that pop up, which is, I think everyone can find something to relate to there. And wait, how about the scene where they're looking, well, first of all, the runner with the lamp that she keeps trying to find.
Oh my God. So funny.
That was so funny. But then when she takes her sister, when she takes Joy Louis-Dreyfus to the store and she's sitting in that chair and she's like eating on the chair and stuff, just again, such like basic delivery. That was wonderful.
Well, it was just honesty in relationships. Like, the sisters, you know, they don't, like, fight all the time. They're not, like, friendly all the time. Like, they just sit down. And it's like, you know, this is a $10,000 bench we're sitting on. It's not even comfortable. And then when they go see the mother, who is also a character on Succession, and I just want to look up that actress's name to give her props. And, oh, my God, I forgot about all the people that are in
that's a great scene, too.
It's just unbelievable where they could play that scene as mean-spirited making fun of her because she is kind of, like, losing it a little bit. Or they could play it a little bit dramatic with the losing it a bit. And instead it's just like, no, you have 300 Tupperware containers. Can I just take a Tupperware container? And it's like, no, wrap the, what is it, like the bread pudding or something, the soup in tinfoil. It's like, Mom, that's crazy. There's just an honesty there that I just absolutely loved. Oh my God. What a wonderful.
You know what's funny about that, Sean, is that scene reminded me with the Tupperware in particular of my grandmother, my late grandmother, because like she would always cook. She had seven kids. She would always cook. And every time you went over there, she was trying to feed you or give you something, but she would literally write down who took her Tupperware. And like, you had to make sure you returned it. And I think I can't count on my two hands cannot count on my two hands how many times my parents bought her like a Tupperware set for a holiday.
Yep. I mean, just opening it up and seeing all the Tupperware, I was like, I know exactly where this is going and I'm okay with it.
I want to mention too, Arian Moyad, I spoke to him, I think last year, maybe it was Tribeca last year or Sundance last year. He has a play called The Courtroom, which they adapted into a film. And it's an immigration story. And he was just a really great guy to chat with. It was him as the writer, as well as the director of the film. And just like really down to earth guy, really friendly. So check that out on YouTube if you want. It was the Courtroom interview with Arian Moyad. But it was really great to see him in this and just see how he's having such success in such diverse projects, which I really enjoy. What was your final grade here?
Oh, this was an A. And it was one of those easy A's where I walked out being like, yep.
Yeah, I was 5 out of 5 immediately. I was like, yep, love this.
Well, you have that Julie Louis-Dreyfus bump.
It is that bump. And you know what's funny? Like with any of those bumps when I go to movies, you know, like for instance, a DC movie, and we're not talking about The Flash today, but a DC movie, I go in with a bump, thinking like, it's DC, whatever. But I always like, that's part of my processing afterwards too. It's like, where am I thinking in this lane simply because I have that bump here? People don't understand how much time we spend wrestling with these ratings.
Do you have any idea? Like, I put out my Ted Lasso review and how much it hurt to make season 3 a C. I was like, put it as a B. Who's going to know? Who's going to care? Like, no one cares. But no, I was like, no, it was that bad.
It hurts.
It really sucked to do, man.
Yeah, I'll wrestle between like a 3 and a 4, and then I'm like, oh my God, and I'll put it out there. And I'm like, maybe I should have done the other one. I should have done the other one. And then
I change them in my head, and I'm fine with it.
And then like 2 weeks later, I'm like, why did I care? Like, It's fine. Let's go the horror route, Sean, with which is your favorite genre, The Boogeyman here, directed by Rob Savage in his first big studio film. This is a film about the boogeyman, but kind of like a reinvented story of a creature that preys on grief. It stars, oh my gosh, I hope I don't put Sophie Thatcher, as well as the wonderful Vivian Lyra Blair, Chris Messina as the father. I had a really good time with this. I said at the end of it, and like when I walked out and I was talking to friends, it didn't do anything to reinvent the horror wheel. But it just kind of delivered a really solid horror film that had me jumping a few times. There were a few jump scares, but also the use of the visuals, the delivery of the visuals through camera work was really unique. Kind of thinking to when Vivian Lyra Blair's character, Sawyer, was on the bed and she saw it go under and she like the camera like flips with her. That was such a... an invasive way of bringing the audience along for that frightening moment. Because who among us has not looked under the bed scared as shit?
My biggest fear is like when, and it's still now, where I literally like whenever I turn on a light or turn on the flashlight and I'm expecting to see something.
There. Something.
Like just, and so this movie just preyed upon that largest insecurity in the toughest of ways.
When it's dark outside and I have like sliding glass doors right here, when it's dark outside and I go to close the curtains, I close my eyes to close them because I'm so afraid that if it like moves a little bit, I'm going to see someone like right there.
Just right there, chilling. Like, and just like some sort of face.
And then I will die.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this plague on that insecurity, like you said, this doesn't reinvent the horror genre at all. In fact, I would say it really hardcore copies it, like to the point where I'm like, I'm seeing it. I'm like, wow, this is tough. Like, I mean, there's the Stephen King notes of like sociopathically horrible teenagers that are just inexplicably bad. I don't know. I gave this a B and I really struggled with almost giving it a C, but it did accomplish what I wanted. I was terrified the entire time, truly terrified.
Yeah.
And what you're saying with Rob Savage as a director, what he eventually ended up doing was having you look in the background all the time. And having you on alert the entire time and looking for movements there. And I mean, if you're doing that kind of stuff, if you're creating that sort of setting, it's wonderful. It's a wonderful movie to enjoy. So like for that alone, I was like, all right, that bumps it up to a B for me. Vivian Lyra Blair does the Abigail Breslin signs where it's just, you know, there's a monster outside my room. Can I have a glass of water? Yeah. Great. Like just like brilliantly funny and charming. And just, you could tell it's just a natural. She's just a natural with that. I mean, obviously Obi-Wan was whatever that series was. I think she was fine in it. Like, I think she was like a good character. It was just a tough go that whole movie, like everyone in that. So, or that whole series. But this is just like
that should have been a movie.
Yeah, this should have been a movie. The talent that she has in this is like unbridled. I think Sophie Thatcher was also quite good to the point where I'm watching Yellow Jackets. I didn't realize it was Sophie Thatcher. Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, she's playing someone very, very different. It's very like I was very impressed by her. Chris Messina is also in the movie.
He kind of gets lost in the background.
Let's not mute Chris Messina like they did in this movie. It's like, have him go hard like in Air or Birds of Prey. Like, don't have him be just like a terrifyingly one note. And I'm just like, oh boy, it was tough. But all in all, I really did enjoy this. I thought I had something else. But just very, very typical horror movie, but does the job. Does the job and does it scares the shit out of you the entire time. So got to give it to them on that.
I read something that they had to change the movie a little bit because it was too scary in test screenings.
Interesting, because I thought it was pretty goddamn scary already.
Yeah, that's the same. I was like, then what the fuck did you do? But MovieWeb has this article right now. Let me just skim it real quick while we're talking. Rob Savage said, the reveal of the movie's titular monster was so scary for audiences that the reaction drowned out some dialogue that immediately followed and led Savage to making a few changes. That's really interesting. Because that's
very interesting.
As a filmmaking tip, too, because I was thinking about this during Transformers, because there's a few like really funny jokes in Transformers, as well as a really like wild reveal thing. But like seeing it with a crowd, there's a good dialogue after, it seems like, but you miss it because the laughs were so loud and like the excitement was so palpable and so audible that you miss a little bit of what's after that. So I always think about, like, I wonder if they know that going in after test screenings and stuff, and they have to rearrange some of the dialogue to make sure that nothing important is being like lost there. But it sounds like
that with comedies, especially like comedies, they have those, like, or even Marvel movies where they built in applause breaks, like when Thor arrives in Wakanda. It's like, oh yeah, they paused a little bit between that. They don't put a line right after that because they know people are going to applaud.
He said, the first time you see the creature, the audience screams so loud and then immediately started talking with their neighbors and chattering that they completely missed the next lines. So we had to recut it and build in 45 seconds of padding just so they didn't miss any vital information.
Interesting.
That's good filmmaking to me.
Yeah. He's done. I didn't see Dash Cam, but I saw Host, and I thought Host was exceptional. And so already right off the bat, I was like, okay, so I'm glad this guy has jumped out of the found footage. I think that this is more a Stephen King problem than a Rob Savage problem. Is okay, they really hit over the head. The monster is grief. I was like, take it easy, guys.
10 minutes in, you're like, got it.
It's like, okay, we get it. Oh, he's a past voices. Okay, holy God, stop saying that.
I think Savage too. Like, if you see Dash Cam, it's very unhinged. Savage is crazy with that movie. It's like it's Host like on cocaine, which is probably why I really liked it. So it's interesting because not only is this his first studio film, but it's under the Disney umbrella ultimately.
Jump into studio.
I know, right? So I see like he's probably playing it safe with it. But I was reading recently as well that he's working on a project with Sam Raimi, multiple projects with Sam Raimi, as well as projects with the Barbarian crew.
Fuck yeah. I almost want them not to all work together though, like branch out and make more shit for us.
Which they already do,
That's true.
Horror is always a safe bet for me. I always go in and like you have to really, really screw it up for me to hate it. Yeah. Just give it like you need a solid story. And you just need the scares and you got me.
Horror and documentary are similar in this one area alone where it's like, oh yeah, you do the job of informing me, or if you do the job of scaring me, I'm giving you a better rating than usual because that is your purpose. You've done that for me. So thank you for that. And I'm going to enjoy it.
Yeah. I'm with you there. I give this a 4 out of 5.
I also gave it a B. Yeah.
Look at us.
We're just simpatico.
Simpatico. I, before I forget, I did mention earlier when we were talking about The Little Mermaid that there was a little bit more about Triton.
Oh, yes.
There was an original song written for him
that
was near the end. And so it gave him a little bit more airtime and a little bit more of like the emotion around Ariel. But they said that in one of the interviews I read that it dragged the or it messed up the pacing of the ending so much that they decided to just cut it and go with what they ended up with. The ending of which I teared up at when all the mermaids are popping up. I was like, oh my God.
They were laying it on thick, but it worked. Like, so yeah. I was saying to myself, like, there was like the cynical side and the emotional side of me where I just said, oh, come on. Oh, okay. Yeah. Actually, good job.
Good job. All right. Last movie to talk about today, Spider-Verse Across the Spider-Verse. The second film in the Spider-Verse series, which I'm willing to bet won't be, at the end of the day, the second movie. I'm sure it would be like one of 17 or something.
Well, as we know, this is a part one. So they definitely have a third. They may pause it then and focus on live action Miles Morales. But who knows?
Did you hear this theory about the live action Miles Morales, though?
Oh, boy. What's this?
There's in Ant-Man Quantumania.
if you remember that movie. All right. I'm already out.
Scott's walking. It's either at the beginning or the end. I want to say it's at the end, but he high fives a kid that's on the bench, like a young kid who has his backpack or whatever. And people are like, did they just introduce us to the Miles?
This is the Iron Man 2, and that's like, Tom Holland under the fucking mask. I'm not dealing with this shit because they could easily just retcon that bullshit and say, oh, yeah, no, totally. I'm not even letting this go. Cut it. Cut that out.
All right. So I said this was like an animated acid trip. I have to be honest. First of all, did you have issues with the sound at the beginning?
Apparently everyone did. I went through this weird thought process where I'm like, I'm having trouble hearing the dialogue. And then of course, like, my mind just immediately like trust this movie and be like, I bet that's intentional. And so then I just like said, okay, I'll just pay closer attention.
Did you move forward like that? Because I think I did.
And I was, well, also, and this is where I'm talking about, this movie wasn't for kids, and I'll explain that in a moment. There was like a very young kid there, and I feel bad because like the kid probably wanted to see the movie and the parents probably wanted to see the movie as well. But the kid wouldn't shut the hell up, especially like during the key scene between Gwen Stacy and her dad. And I was just like, yo.
There was a kid at Transformers last night, a baby. It had to be a baby. It was crying the entire time. And then this other woman who was like hacking up a lung, and I was concerned that she was not going to make it. It was an interesting experience.
Hell of a crowd at your Transformers screening.
It was a night. let's talk about the film. Sean, start us off here.
I adored this movie. It might be my top movie. I have to think about it a little bit. I think that, you know, the hot take, or not a hot take, I don't know which one, but I think this is better than Into the Spider-Verse. I understand recency. I get it. I think that, you it's almost heresy to say that because Into the Spider-Verse did like welcome something new, but I think this did a lot. I understand the criticisms. I understand the cliffhanger ending. I get that some people think it was padded, like with a little bit extra runtime. I don't think it was. This movie moved fast for me. It had a good, solid, cohesive story the whole way through. It is long based on, you know, how time works, but I mean, what am I going to say? Oh, there was like too many amazing scenes in this. I adored this movie. I think this is why you have animation, is to do the impossible, do what you can't do in live action. And I think that that's what's beautiful about this. It's truly a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful movie. I don't know how I can even go further with it, like to explain further. I think that the different animations in the different worlds is spectacular. I think it's visually stunning. I feel so stupid. I want to punch myself in the face for saying this, but this is high art in cinema. It really is. Mm-hmm. And it seems nuts to say that for one animation, two for a Spider-Man movie, but it succeeds in both ways. And I loved this movie. I loved everything about it. I think that it's interesting that they have this canon. They silently and subtly rail against people that said there can't be a Black Spider-Man. Very slightly with the Miguel O'Hara, you're not supposed to be here. Like, you're technically an anomaly. And I think that was an interesting way of like, you know, you can't change this story. You can't change this story at all. I think that what's interesting, and I heard this from your reactions, and I'll let you correct yourself or, you know, defend it. But when in the beginning, when it's like a 45 minutes before you even get any action starting, I love those 45 minutes. Like, it is just a family comedy, and there isn't really like any Spider-Man action happening. Yeah. But I loved that. I mean, the parents with Miles, and the way we're covering a different culture, And, you know, the way he's getting a B in Spanish, and that's what upsets him. And New Jersey is not that far from New York. And I love all of those little moments, and that comedy there is so great. I think this had to have been a nightmare to storyboard. I don't know how you conceptualize this. His fight with the spot. I don't know how, who, by the way, the entire time I thought was Ben Schwartz.
And same here.
Dude, it was nuts. Like, I genuinely thought it was Ben Schwartz. Jason Schwartzman's on there. I was like, oh, I guess I forgot to put Ben Schwartz on there. Like, also, just like, this voice cast is exceptional in every way. But shout out to them casting Shea Whigham for Haley Steinfeld's dad. It's just like character actor Shea Whigham. Let's bring him in for a beat. I was like, fuck yeah.
What about my reaction?
I think that you didn't like the first, or not didn't like, but weren't a fan of the first like 45 minutes or so before the Spider-Man got there because it was a little bit boring. Maybe you were wrong.
Maybe I did say that, and I need to correct myself. I enjoyed that. I really liked it. What my issue was going into it was I was like, the animation was jarring because we didn't start with where we ended. We didn't start with the animation of Miles Morales' universe. We started with the animation of Gwen Stacy's universe, which is a very different color palette and a very different style with like the color bleeding in and out. And it kind of, and in addition to the sound and the stuff, sound it really caught me off guard. But I like what they did. I think they did a really great job with it. I ultimately gave this a 5 out of 5.
Oh yeah. No, I know this one, that wasn't like a nitpick that was huge.
No. So it was, I really liked the fact that they focused on Gwen there, and she ultimately she was like a through line in all this. I don't think she's surviving the next movie, by the way. And I also think that they're playing on her being bisexual, but there's,
I want to talk about that because I don't like that, actually. I'm actually going to cut in on that one just for – because they have, like – she has the sticker that says trans rights or protect trans kids or trans rights or human rights. Uh-huh. And so everyone is sort of going into, oh, she's trans or, oh, she's bisexual or something in that nature. I like the idea of her just being straight but also having empathy. Like, I don't think she has to be those things in order to support them. And I almost think that would be – better. And now I'm arguing against more diverse characters in a comic book, but only because like I don't want it to seem like, oh, only trans people can support trans people. Not that that's what they're saying and not what that would be, but I think that that's where the discourse like slowly shifted. And so when I kept on hearing those online arguments, I started to get a little bit piffy for that reason.
Yeah, I may have this wrong, but I think that in one of the versions of her in the comics is bisexual. I may be very wrong on that, but it's just the interaction with and her admiration for oh my gosh, I'm gonna get the character wrong. The first Spider Woman that we see.
Oh, Issa Rae. Jessica Drew.
Jessica Drew. Yeah. That kind of like tipped me off a little bit, and that tipped me off a little bit, and then. I mean, listen, you can still support that trans rights and actually. be bisexual or be straight or be gay or be, you know, whatever. So I did like that they included that in there as well, because I think that one thing that this story is an inclusive story, and people are railing against the Muslim character that's in this, or the Indian character that's in this. I apologize.
People are railing against the, get the hell out of here.
Well, there's a lot of videos, and it's Karen Sony, I believe is the name of the voice actor there, for Pevatar Prop. Prabhakar, I believe the name is, but I loved the animation of him, and I loved the inclusion. The story with that a little bit, or what's interesting is people railing against that, is that Miles Morales came around after this character was introduced in the comics. This Indian Spider-Man was introduced first before Miles Morales was. So first of all, do your research, idiots. But second of all, I was watching an interview with, I believe it was him and I'm trying to remember who else was there. Shameik Moore, I think Haley Steinfeld was there. And they were talking about how they wanted to rework that character a little bit more. So they asked him to come in and help with the writing. And that's where things like the chai tea joke, that bit came from.
And the eat, pray, love comparison. Which was amazing.
So that was a really cool way that they like brought the cast in and made it more authentic. And I love that. It is a celebration of not only diverse cultures, but diverse takes on characters. You know, that's why we have the Spider-Verse here with all the different ones that we saw in that chase scene where they're trying to get to Miles Morales. You see so many different spider people. And it's just, it was fascinating. It was so much fun to catch like all the different references. Even when they did like the Lego thing, you know, like that was really cool.
So apparently that was fan created, and they brought that fan on.
That's awesome.
I'm telling this out of school. I don't know if it's actually like I heard that on the podcast. So God help me if I might be wrong about that. But I heard that that's what they did. And they brought them on, like, you know, like, hey, do you want to do this scene? And I was like, oh God.
Yeah. I just overall think that, like you said, telling a story like this is wild. Telling it successfully is wild to me, because there's a lot that they're juggling here. And like my one knock for a little while until I thought about it a little bit more was that the spot does take a back seat here, but they do a good enough job of introducing his issues and what's going on and what his motivations are, and then build up the other stuff that is necessary when you're in middle movie here, that's going to then come to, you know, a conclusion in Beyond the Spider-Verse, which I don't believe is going to make a March release date, by the way.
Oh, it's not, I think they all but confirmed it at this point that it's not making it. Like,
the other thing though that I really, really, really love about this movie, I turned to the critic that was sitting next to me right after this, and I said, isn't it amazing that an animated Spider-Man movie just explained the concept of the multiverse better than 30 some Marvel movies in the MCU have? The whole explanation by Miguel Herrera about like how things happen, like what happens if there's a canon event that is disrupted, how that impacts everything else, was so brilliantly and simply presented. And also, like, the, you know, there's little cameos, so to speak, in there, which was just so warm to see. It's fan service to an extent. But how about,
it's fan service without getting in the way. Like,
it's part of the story. It worked.
It was just like little one-offs. I mean, you know, we see, okay, so slight spoilers here if you're still with us. Like, I mean, you see Donald Glover, almost see Venom. I thought they were going to show him. I thought for a moment you were going to see, I can't remember his name. God help me. Tom Hardy's Venom. And you don't. But it's interesting that you see Maguire in one scene, Tobey Maguire. You see Garfield in another scene. But we don't see Holland, although, you know, they definitely acknowledge his universe. I don't know if that's, you know, a bitter little Sony thing. I don't think it is. But, you know, that was something that I did notice. I was like, interesting. But they do have Donald Glover, which is technically in the Holland universe, as the Prowler.
Well, and it also makes the two after credit scenes for Venom, one for Venom and one for Morbius, make more sense.
Yeah.
The one for Venom where he gets like snapped or whatever to Tom Holland's universe, that makes sense now given the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
And the explanation there. The fact that the Vulture showed up in Morbius's universe or whatever, that also makes sense now based on the Spider-Verse. It's really amazing that like this is the vehicle for making shit make sense. It's the glue. It's the glue. And you know, on top of the fact that they spent, you know, so that's what they're tasked with, right? Not only deliver a solid movie, not only explain shit that got fucked up in other movies, but then the animation itself, like, and the particular focus on detail, attention to detail when it comes to specific characters, like Spider-Punk, for instance.
I was, you know, like hoping that you would mention him. Yeah,
I was reading something, and that's Daniel Kaluuya voicing him. I was reading something where they were like, they really wanted him to have a disruptive style visually as well. So in terms of animation frames, the movie's in one frame. Miles Morales is always in two frames. His movements are in two frames, and they move Spider-Punk to three frames. So it's just like, it's just fascinating hearing that shit.
It's, and he's basically a zine, which I thought was brilliant. Yeah. I love that, first of all, Daniel Kaluuya was finally able to use his actual accent. I don't think I've heard that since Black Mirror. And so I was just so happy. I was like, oh, good. And I love that, like, he just uses the thickest of accents, and you kind of can't understand him most of the time. And I thought that was great, because I thought it was just like, oh, we're getting the authentic nature of this character. Where it's just like, yeah, sometimes you just won't be able to like understand all the Cockney slang that they're putting in, even though they put in some box translations in there for fun little bits. I thought that the Peter B. Parker evolution was amazing. Yeah. And now I believe Spider-May, or how did...
The baby?
Yeah, the baby.
Yeah.
Excellent. Knitted cap is the Spider-Man mask. Truly amazing. Like, I'm so in for that, without a doubt. Like, him being a dad and like him like constantly taking her on adventures. Awesome stuff. I loved everything about this. I really did. I think Oscar Isaac's voice was spectacular, like really, really good, like really impassioned and stuff. So I'm in on this one.
And I did call his character Miguel Herrera, and it's Miguel O'Hara.
O'Hara, yeah.
Getting all this.
I didn't know what I heard at that point, but yeah, I think you're good. But oh my god, I'm trying to think of like any other little things I had. But the cliffhanger didn't bother me, and it's weird that like normally that cliffhanger would bother me. But I do think they did complete the story of Gwen Stacy, and so I think that's the story they needed to complete. You're leaving things hanging. This is not as bad of a cliffhanger as Fast X, which pretty much cuts to black mid-action sequence. Like, it's just like that was straight up insulting. Where this one, there is this conclusion to it with all of them joining together. No notes. This was spectacular.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I was 5 out of 5.
I was A.
Yeah. What a solid two. I think I was a 5 out of 5 on the first one too. Like, what a series so far.
It is just really great. Like, I remember the first one did just sneak up on everybody.
Yeah.
I didn't see it like on the opening night. I saw it like a few weeks after, and yeah, not that I was like worried about it or anything, but I just didn't get the chance, and I like fell in love with it immediately, and it shocked the world by getting the best animated feature over like, you know, stop motion films like Isle of Dogs and everything. I will be writing about whether this one's going to be animated feature or not next week on the column. And it's going to be a little bit harder than we all think. There's stuff out there. I think the biggest one is going to be Hayao Miyazaki's final film is coming out. And he got the nomination he got the win with Spirited Away back in 2002. So it's going to be a little bit dicey. I still think, you know, obviously it's probably in the lead, but it's going to be weird.
You think it at least gets a nomination, or are you talking?
Oh, Jesus, yes, definitely nomination. I'm talking about a win is going to be tough. Gotcha. But definitely nomination.
Interesting. All right. Well, listen, this week we have what you're going to see it tonight. Transformers.
I'm seeing Transformers in a couple of hours, 7 o'clock. I say that just so that I can make sure.
Transformers: Rise of the Beast. We'll be talking about that on the pod this weekend, coming out Monday. Other than that, we have Flamin' Hot also hitting Hulu on Friday. And check out interviews that I did with cast member Annie Gonzalez and producer Devon Franklin. That's on YouTube. Annie Gonzalez was hilarious.
I love that interview with it. Yeah, the energy from her was great.
She's awesome.
Also, shout out to AMC Theaters for not playing fucking Past Lives. Like, let's go. I'm getting furious because every podcast is coming out with reviews for it. Like, it's out in theaters everywhere. And just, you know, no, we're not going to play Past Lives at all. It's like, come on, AMC.
Wait, but is that's not wide yet, is it?
People are reviewing it like it's wide. People are like, it's in theaters everywhere. But I'm looking ahead of time, and AMC doesn't have it in their slate at all. But, you know, they don't have anything really yet. So hopefully
my screening for it is on Monday.
Yeah. It's trickling out. So
I'm wondering, let me see what it says. Nationwide. June 16th in Philadelphia, nationwide on June 23rd.
Nationwide, June 23rd. Okay, I'm going to keep that in mind. I'm keeping that in the bank because I was getting a little bit furious. I was like looking ahead everywhere, trying to find it at any AMC theater that's around because I'm not seeing any movies in any other theater. Because, damn it.
Do you have a Thursday movie this week or no?
No. If the air is not toxic tomorrow, I'm probably going to go to a cigar night at my local brewery. But also, I think that maybe cigars in this weather might not be the best move. Like, it's just the air will burst into flames.
Oh my god. Well, listen, Sean, best of luck surviving the apocalypse, and we'll talk this weekend.
You too.
Later.
The Guy at the Movies podcast is a joint venture between Math Teacher Movies and Guy at the Movies. You can catch new episodes weekly right here wherever you're listening to this one. Subscribe so you never miss a beat.